Good morning, Birdland. I'm Mark Brown. I've been blogging about the Orioles for more than a decade on CamdenChat.com and waiting for them to win the World Series for my whole life. Thanks for listening today. Let's talk some Orioles. It is now September the 8th, 2023. The Orioles are 88-51, really 88 wins and 51 losses after their Wednesday blowout of the Angels that finished a sweep out in Los Angeles. The Orioles needed to take care of business against a staggering squad like the Angels are, and that's absolutely what they did. So, starting in 1984, there are only five Orioles teams who've ever won more games than the 2023 Orioles have currently won. That was 1992 and 2016. Both of those teams won 89. In 2012, the Orioles won 93. In 2014, they won 96. And in 1997, they won 98 games. So basically, with one more win, the Orioles will have at least equaled all but three of the last 30 seasons' win totals. And the Orioles only need to have an 11-12 finish over their last 23 games to be the best regular season Orioles team of my life and the life of anyone who is under about 40 years old. A couple months, give and take, of course, if you were born in the latter months of the 83 season. And if they go over 500 at all, which at 12-11 or better from right now, the Orioles would become the first ever Baltimore Orioles team to win 100 games that was not managed by Earl Weaver, which is honestly really remarkable. You know, 12-11 is not even an overwhelmingly great finish. The Orioles are, in fact, on pace to win 103 games rather than 100, which would be a 15-8 finish, which is crazy. You know, everything about the Orioles' success this year just feels so crazy because we've never seen anything quite like this. And it's amazing, right? I mean, the Orioles didn't even play on Thursday and they gained ground in the American League East because the Seattle Mariners did the Orioles a favor. They beat the Tampa Bay Rays, a 1-0 victory, holding the Rays to just four hits in the game. So that kicks the Orioles to a 4-game lead in the AL East with 23 games still to play, reduces the magic number for the Orioles to clinch down to 19. And additionally, the magic number to clinch anything at all is down to, I believe, 9. In the last episode, I was hastily mistaken, gave out a tiny bit of erroneous information because I had actually not been paying attention to the Texas Rangers swan dive that has actually had them fall below the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays are now in wild card 3, and the Rangers are the last team that is out and looking in. So Orioles win or Rays loss reduces the AL East magic number. Orioles win or Rangers loss reduces the clinch anything magic number. As of right now, the Orioles would have the ALDS series get a bye through the wild card. They would face the winner of Rays Mariners, or it could end up being the Astros. Whatever team is in second place in the AL West is likely to play the Rays, or really whatever team finishes second in the AL East in a wild card matchup. If the Orioles end up falling to that wild card spot, they would host the AL West second place, barring something really crazy happening. So really, I mean, again, it's amazing what is happening this season, right? Like, I feel if you went back in March, not even the crazy optimists in March would have predicted that the Orioles would have the potential to win 99 games over the course of this season or more, right? You were probably a bit more optimistic than like the models and the sports books that had the Orioles in the mid to upper 70s win totals. But again, on pace for 103 with only 23 games left to play. No, come on. Give me a break. Nobody would have predicted that because we've not seen the Orioles hit the century mark since 1980. And even if you believed good things for this year, you know, hitting 100 would have been crazy. And for me, I mean, I really genuinely thought the Orioles would hover around 500 or maybe a tiny bit above it, just like they did last year. I put my prediction down on Camden Chat for an 81-81 record. You know, the spring training fact that I was talking about in the very early episodes of this show about the fate that usually befalls teams when they massively improve from one year to the next into year three. It really lodged in my brain. You know, the Orioles had 52 wins in the 2021 season, jumped up to 83 wins last year. The history across decades of baseball is that a team that does that is going to win fewer games in year three than it did in year two. You know, you don't want to have to concoct reasons for why your team is going to be immune to history. Most of the time, that's going to end up disappointing for you. Most of the time. The Orioles, here we are in the final month of the season, and they've defied that history. They've absolutely done it already. You know, they equaled last year's win total before the calendar even turned over into September. I've used this word a lot. It's just crazy, and it's amazing because it's beyond even your wildest dreams, I think, certainly mine, for what might have happened this year. And I mean, as I'm recording this on the Orioles off day, I've really been thinking about where the Orioles have exceeded my expectations this year. Obviously, they've way exceeded my expectations in the standings overall. I'm more thinking about performance from specific players and parts of the roster, right? And especially, I think the number one has got to be starting rotation, because I really didn't have any kind of confidence that a rotation consisting of Kyle Gibson, Dean Kramer, Kyle Bradish, Tyler Wells, and Cole Irvin, which is what was the Orioles rotation heading out of camp, I didn't think that was going to be good enough to consistently win games this year. I was not a believer that Kyle Bradish's second half of last year was going to carry forward into this year. Dean Kramer, I didn't think he would be able to carry forward his 2022 performance over a full season either. You know, Kyle Gibson, of course, came with a 5+ ERA last year. Cole Irvin, who the Orioles traded for, again, he had a below average ERA plus in his two seasons in the Oakland Athletics rotation. And Tyler Wells was also below average when adjusting for park and league over the full season last year. So, I mean, just really, and even think about it. If you would have been told in March that Cole Irvin and Tyler Wells would be demoted to the minors as the season went along, that John Means would not throw a pitch for the Orioles before the month of September, that Kyle Gibson would, in fact, be equaling his 2022 results, that Grayson Rodriguez would come up and have a 7.35 ERA after his first 10 starts and get demoted back to the minors. If you thought of all those things, would you be predicting the first place Orioles in September? No, nobody would have. It is pretty much unfathomable. But underneath those top things were enough signs for success. Gibson, although he has a 5.12 ERA this season, has, you know, quote unquote, given his team a chance to win enough games, and he has the AL lead, or is tied for it, with 14 wins. Tyler Wells, although he did get demoted, was the MLB leader in WHIP through the end of June, really only fell apart in July once he crossed over his innings total that he pitched all of last season. Grayson Rodriguez came back. He's got a 2.89 ERA in 9 second half starts. And Dean Kramer also improved in the second half, a 2.86 ERA in 10 starts for Kramer in the second half. So things have looked better than some of those glum-sounding things, especially in the second half. Players have done better. And, you know, Kyle Bradish consistently through the season has done great. In fact, it does look like his second half performance from last year was real. You know, MLB.com does, I don't know, I don't put a lot of stock in, oh, here's the power rankings of whatever, but they did a starting pitcher power rankings, and Kyle Bradish is number 9 in all of baseball, according to whatever they're using to determine that. And I mean, if you look at his results this year, I think he's absolutely been a top 10 pitcher in baseball, which is amazing. It's great. And I think that is a huge part of why the Orioles are overachieving relative to what anyone would have expected. You know, I don't think Bradish coming forward as a top of the rotation guy was something many people would have thought. So here we are, the starting rotation, much better than you might have feared, or I might have feared and did fear. And I'm still a little nervous about some of the guys. You know, I mean, Gibson, he's still got the ERA over 5. Jack Flaherty, the Orioles traded for him. He has not shown much so far. You know, who knows if these guys are going to tire down the last weeks. But for now, most of them have done well, or half of them have done at least pretty good. And It's part of why things are fun. And that brings us to the bullpen. Also part of why things are fun. Really, for any concern I had about the team, I wasn't really having the bullpen as a source of concern. But that's because I thought Felix Bautista, Dylan Tate, and Cionel Pérez would be a fine back end of the bullpen trio. And Tate has not ended up pitching. Pérez struggled heavily in April and May, and I wondered why the Orioles had not just chucked him into the designated for assignment pile. Michael Givens, they signed him. He was meant to be the veteran to bolster the bullpen, but he had six bad games. Injuries is now gone. So, I mean, again, in March, if you had known, okay, Tate wouldn't pitch, Givens would barely pitch, Pérez would be bad for the first 2 months of the season, you might have thought, okay, that's going to portend disaster for the 2023 Orioles. But they've gotten unexpected contributions. Yennier Cano, of course, who they acquired for Jorge Lopez last July. A 1.65 ERA, 0.949 WHIP. Danny Colome, who they got at the end of spring training for merely cash considerations, probably about $50,000, as his former team, the Minnesota Twins, just decided they didn't have room for him on the 2023 roster. Came to the Orioles, 2.45 ERA, 2.56 FIP, a 1.023 WHIP. Amazing. And they've been shuffling guys out throughout the season. Mike Bauman and Brian Baker got sent to the minors. Austin Voth and Keegan Aiken have each spent time significantly on the injured list. Voth got designated for assignment. The Orioles lately added Shintaro Fujinami, Jacob Webb, and D.L. Hall into the bullpen mix. And, you know, they're going to be counting on those guys. But overall, the bullpen ERA this year, a 3.53 ERA. That is the fourth best bullpen by ERA in all of baseball, even despite assorted outings by whatever player in the bullpen frustrates you the most. And for me, by the way, I think that was Brian Baker and his penchant for allowing inherited runners to score. And again, even despite that, fourth best bullpen in ERA. Of course, they are going to have to overcome the absence of Felix Bautista's ulnar collateral ligament injury, the severity of which has not yet been fully determined, or at least not announced to us. And, you know, that is a hurdle, but there's good guys in the bullpen. And even Pérez, who I was very negative about at the end of May, has been pitching a lot better since the end of May. You know, June, July, August, and now September, Pérez has done pretty well. So the Orioles have, in fact, found a pretty good back-end trio still through all of the challenges they've experienced this year, and that's pretty darn good. I will be right back after a message from a Fans First Sports Network sponsor. Before I get back into looking at the things that I have really exceeded my expectations about the Orioles this year, I do want to plug the mailbag, CamdenCastPod@gmail.com. No specific messages today, but if you have a topic or a question for a future episode of the show, then you can email that, and I will be happy to talk about it on a future episode. Thank you to everyone who has written in so far. So another group that really has exceeded my expectations, really talk about some hitters. For me particularly, I was not convinced that all of Austin Hayes, Anthony Santander, and Ryan Mountcastle would do enough to deserve continued roster spots on a contending team. But then I figured they'd also kind of be in the limbo zone where they're not really bad enough where it's easy to get rid of them. I feel none of these guys had been a combination of healthy and good over a full major league season. Mountcastle, although he did hit 33 home runs 2 years ago, was really limited in defensive value that year. That was actually only a one baseball reference WAR season for him. And of course, now that the new left field wall is out there in Camden Yards, that's a real handicap for him for hitting 33 again. But all three of those guys are worth at least two WAR so far this year. Mountcastle has been doing great since his return from vertigo. Anthony Santander overcame some April scuffles. He's had a couple months where he was on a serious heater, which is kind of the Santander specialty. Austin Hayes was really bad in July, but he's had it over 800 OPS every other month of the season. Cedric Mullins has only played in 93 games, and, you know, no prospect like Kyle Stowers or Colton Cowser ended up grabbing outfield playing time in Mullins' absence. And One more guy on this list, not an outfielder. I really thought Adam Frazier was going to be like in the Rougned Odor tier of well below average hitter. And Frazier has not been a good hitter, but he's been good enough. And so put all of that together, and the Orioles have been making this thing work. Bumps have come along, and the Orioles have kept rolling. Ryan O'Hearn has been a surprise find as a bench bat. I wouldn't go quite so far as to say he's like the equivalent of the 2014 Steve Pierce, as 2014 Pierce was a much more elite hitter than O'Hearn has been. O'Hearn has been pretty good, but he's not on the 2014 Pierce level. Of course, Aaron Hicks ended up being the Orioles' fill-in when Mullins got hurt after getting cast aside by the Yankees for being a combination of hurt and bad, even with multiple years remaining on his contract. And really, the Orioles have mostly avoided new injuries to key pitchers through the year, up until the injury to Bautista's ulnar collateral ligament, the UCL. Again, still unknown severity. And they came into this year with we knew he was going to be on the Tommy John rehab. Came into spring training and Tate was out of the picture. But as the season has gone along, none of their key guys, up until Bautista's injury, ended up getting hurt. So that has helped them too. Good injury luck. And really, it's the same for the position players other than the Mullins injury. And Hicks had a little stint on the injured list as well. I mean, earlier in the season, Bradish was on the injured list for a little bit too. But overall, especially when you look at, the Rays who are chasing the Orioles have had pretty good injury luck. So that's also really helped them. And I mean, every time I bring it up, the no sweep streak, it's impressive. It's been 80 years since any team has done what the Orioles have done with not getting swept. And, there's luck involved in that, but there's also a lot of talent on the team. And there's a lot, I think, of mental fortitude in the way that the Orioles don't get disheartened by a bad loss or even a couple bad losses that leaves them on the verge of getting swept. If I'm remembering correctly, they've staved off a sweep in the third game of a series 8 times this season, which that's great, right? That's how you get your streak setting a record since the end of World War II, because you don't get fazed when you're like, oh man, we got to win this one, keep the streak going. And of course, I don't even know how much the players care about it, right? It's just a cool thing for fans to fixate on, I think. But of course, the players are there. They want to win games. They don't want to get in long losing streaks, because now that they're in the race, they want to keep themselves in the best position they possibly can be in the race. And they're doing an amazing job of it so far. I am so thrilled to see it. I have gotten a couple messages from people who are like, oh man, you're too negative on this podcast. And it's like, I guess maybe I get how sometimes it comes across as in a negative way, but really it's just like absolute bewilderment and me trying to search for an explanation when there's literally in my life experience as an Orioles fan, nothing like this. So trying to find rational explanations for it, it goes beyond my resources. And I certainly do. Maybe it doesn't always come across on this show as much as I'd like, as if I record after dumb losses or whatever, but like, I'm enjoying the ride, man. This is amazing. It's wonderful. The Orioles are almost certain to make the postseason period. It's all but a formality with the magic number of 9 with 23 left to play. They have a very good chance to clinch the AL East, especially with the 4-game series looming against the Rays. Really, as long as the Orioles at least split that series, again, it won't be like they've clinched at the end of the series, but as long as they at least split, and if they win at least one game, they'll have the tiebreaker on the Rays, then that's going to leave them where it's just a matter of time to winning the division, getting a bye. And that's amazing, too. It's fun. I don't know where it's going to end up, but I remember, 9 years ago now, it was in the initial Orioles getting swept as the Royals just lucked into every hit for 4 straight games. It was a bitter disappointment. I'm still annoyed and will hate the Royals forever, especially the players who were on that Royals team because of that. But one thing that I also always remember is immediately after that sweep happened, the 2014 Orioles season was done, some reporter was in the locker room and asked Adam Jones, what did he think of the 2014 season. Again, that was right after he got swept. He's in there. The season's over. And Adam Jones's answer was effing awesome, except he didn't say effing. You know, I'm not going to fill it in because I keep clean tab on iTunes for this podcast. And if Adam Jones, who was in the just in the freshness of getting swept, could say that about this season, that season, then we can say the same about the 2023 Orioles, wherever they end. Although it will sting if they don't win the World Series. But again, I mean, it's amazing. Like, it's September the 7th, and we can talk about the possibility that the Orioles could make or win the World Series. It's amazing. You know, the baseball reference, which calculates postseason odds and also World Series odds, right at this moment, or really heading into today, gave the Orioles a 12.6 chance to win the World Series. So that's a 1-in-8 shot right now with 23 games left to play, according to them, of winning the World Series. 1-in-8. And remember, in my lifetime, we're talking 0 out of 30 in making it to the World, 0 out of 40 in making it to the World Series at all. So that's wonderful. It's amazing. And so, you know, the next hurdle in the way, the next series, the Orioles play the Boston Red Sox this weekend, who just lost 2 out of 3 to those same Rays. Red Sox are 72-68 on the season, so they are a few games above 500, but they're 5 games out of wild card spot. They're 3-7 over their last 10 games, so hopes are really fading for them. They're not over, but they're getting pretty close to the end. So, I mean, here's another series where the Orioles really, it would behoove them to take advantage of a team that's had some recent problems. In brief, the pitching matchups for the series. Friday, Kyle Bradish for the Orioles facing off against Tanner Houck for the Red Sox. Houck has a 5.07 ERA this year. Saturday, Jack Flaherty for the Orioles versus Chris Sale for the Red Sox. Sale with a 4.46 ERA this year, although perhaps a bit unlucky, he has a 3.67 FIP. So hopefully his luck does not start turning around against the Orioles this weekend. Of course, Flaherty, other than his first game as an Oriole, when I was in Hawaii and I didn't see it, has not been very good. So I've never seen him be good, and I'm pretty down on him for that reason. So, you know, the first two games on paper, one favors, I think, the Orioles, the other maybe a bit more the Red Sox. And then the Sunday game, I think it's really going to be an interesting match of young starters who've had some recent success this season. Grayson Rodriguez pitching for the Orioles, and the Red Sox starter is going to be Brian Bayo. Bayo is actually the best Red Sox player by BWAR so far this season. He's got a 3.7. That's actually a tiny bit better than Kyle Bradish with his 3.61 ERA over 24 starts for Bayo. But I think the key number for the Boston Red Sox, they're averaging 5 runs per game since the All-Star break, but they're also allowing just as many runs as that. They've got 246 runs scored and 249 allowed since the All-Star break. And I mean, the 2023 season for the Orioles began with 3 slugfests in Fenway Park. And so we're already familiar with that and returning to the scene of that crime. So we'll see what early September holds in Fenway Park now that the Orioles, I think, have had a chance to solidify into a better team than anyone would have believed that they were in the last days of March, early days of April. And so what can they do this weekend? I don't know, but hopefully they can win 2 out of 3, and then we'll see what happens as the Rays play another 3 games against the Mariners. It is not inconceivable if the Orioles win 2 against the Red Sox and the Rays end up with a split against the Mariners that the magic number would then be down to 16 by the end of the weekend, which, I mean, that would be pretty freaking cool. We'll see what ends up happening. That is all that I've got for today. If you are enjoying this podcast, you can subscribe on your favorite platform and leave a rating or review and tell an Orioles fan in your life about the show. New episodes will be out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning, so I will be back with you on Monday, hopefully, with an awesome series against the Red Sox from the weekend to talk about. In between now and then, you can leave a comment on Camden Chat. You will find me there in the comments under the name EatMoreSK, though I do publish articles under my real name, Mark Brown. Good Morning Birdland is a Camden Cast production on the Fans First Sports Network. Until next time, go O's!